C4. Number 24B.
Now, this first and second record of creation, as I have said, is depicted in many books that are available. It was a great subject at the beginning of John Dolittle's discovery of the seven, and so much weight and stress has then been given to those two records of creation. Very seldom, or as far as I remember, never has it been considered that in the chapter on creation there is third part. Somehow thought has always turned around mainly the first record of creation, here and there, sometimes about the count of feet. You see, the second record of creation is not the creation by itself, but it's the count of feet of the first record of creation. And practically never has any attention been given to the third part. But it's there, and it constitutes a part of that chapter and should be taken into consideration. And I think what is shown here is this. You see, the first part goes out from love and mind. It shows love's all-inclusive creation. That infinite self-containment, which is love, has an infinite emanation, which is mind, has an infinite creation going on. So the first part shows creation from the point of view of love and mind. The second part shows the counterfeit of the first record of creation. As a counterfeit, as an erroneous creation, it shows the counterfeit of truth and mind. It uncovers really there that error's creation is not true, that it is a lie. Therefore, that which can uncover that creation is truth and mind. Knowing the truth about the first record of creation uncovers the lie about the second record of creation. When we come to the third part, then it seems that the overall tone is life and mind. So you had love and mind, then truth and mind, and now life and mind. Again, that order of love, truth, life, just as we had it in the chapter on Christian Science Practice, you remember? There it was Christianity as science, and here it is science as Christianity, again, where we can see the order of life, truth, and love reversed or inversed, starting out with the perfection of love, seeing that the perfection of love uncovers through its truth the error of the second record of creation, and finally the third part shows that there is actually no creation, that there is actually only isness of being, life. And here we have therefore a presentation that creation exists, so to say. Creation exists. Exists is life. Creation is mind. That creation exists. That life is the eternal creator. Life and mind. That life is the eternal creator. Now the focus is constantly on life, on isness, which is, so to say, the fact about accretion. A lot of the text, therefore, is in connection with the various theories of evolution, in order to show that the theories of evolution give a wrong picture of the isness of being, that nothing could have been created which did not exist forever in the infinite mind, that there is no creation except that which existed since time immemorial in the divine mind. Can you see? Life and mind. So here the various attempts to explain evolution are being touched upon. The theories of creation, Darwin, Agassiz is mentioned, the history of evolution is shown, the history of mortal material life. She talks about embryology, propagation, generation, reproduction, multiplication through eggs, multiplication through germs and buds and self-division. He speaks about what is the origin of life, what was first, the hen or the egg, all these great questions. Naturally, today she would write it differently in taking other illustrations, because at her time they only had Darwin's theory of evolution and that rather primitive theory of Agassiz as a theory of evolution. Today, when she would live today, she would have to mention and would have to bring up all the questions of the modern genealogy, genetics, which has only been discovered about 20 years ago. See, there she would have to go into the much more refined question of genes and chromosomes, of the double helix, of the cybernetic law operating in biology, in reproduction. Today they are no more asking the question, what was first, the hen or the egg? This is for them a absolutely wrong question, and is done with, because they have found the answer in the cybernetic law of evolution, where that question doesn't come up again. You see, the modern genetics, you see, ask very different questions than at Mrs. Edita. So she would have to go into this, but her answer would be the same, because being has not changed, because new theories have been established, or one has actually seen much deeper into that whole question of reproduction. Her answer would still be the same, and actually the modern biologists approach her answer much more than the older ones. It's interesting, the day that I gave for the first time the structure of the Christian Science textbook as our way of life in London, the day we finished that first presentation of the old book, and it was in 52 or 53, at that very moment when we came out of the lecture hall, they sold the newspaper, the evening paper, greatly advertising they found the genetic code. And so many were interested in it, to see that when an idea is moving, that it pops up all over the place somehow, that the signs are all over the place, because the age is ready to conceive of a new child. Just as at the time of Jesus, everybody was speaking about the Christ will come, every mother felt that when she had a child, this will be the Christ, this will be the Savior. The whole atmosphere was right full, the Christ must come now. And so it is always, when a new idea is being born, it just pops up everywhere. And I think here in this part of creation, which actually was that part, which made me realize that I could open up the textbook and see the structure of the textbook, really happened with this part. This was the first indication I had of the structure. It wasn't so that I started with prayer and said, now I'm going to see the structure of the textbook, and to see that I start with prayer and study prayer. I didn't think of anything about the textbook and structure of the textbook and decoding, so to say, the text of the textbook, until through one incident, somehow out of the blue, within 20 minutes or so, I suddenly saw, right in this part, that there is a structure in each chapter. So it's life impulsion, you see, the life and mind, life the creator, creating through the one mind, that is really showing us the whole creation. So here Mrs. Eddy presents that creation from the nature of life, namely, without beginning and without end. That life has no origin, no beginning, there is no question about the first cause, that life is self-existent, is eternal, that life and being are coexistent, that life is the cause of all that exists, life is. Her great tone goes right through, life is, life is, life is. And because life is, she looks at it from the point of view of mind and begins to see that everything originates in the divine mind. And you have that interesting statement for the first time, that ideas are productive. Never, never did she say such a thing. Up to this point, it was always mind is the producer, mind is the cause, mind is the creator. Now at once, suddenly she speaks about the ideas are productive. That this creation is always, from the point of view of spirit, the likeness of spirit. That it didn't need to develop. But it is always unchangeable from the point of view of soul. It never had to come to the point of identity. It has always identity and is unchangeable. It's always something that can only be understood from the point of view of principle. Self-maintaining in life, self-sustaining, and always conscious of itself. We have to do with a creation that is conscious of itself. We always feel that we should be conscious of. Whereas being is consciousness. Being is consciousness, and is consciousness before there was a brain to be used as a transparency for consciousness. Consciousness is being. Being is conscious of itself. And therefore always coexists with God. Well, we come to the last chapter, the Apocalypse. Apocalypse is a terrific chapter. And to take it just in a quarter of an hour is really a brutal treatment of that beautiful chapter. But it's so beautiful, but John Dorley has talked about that chapter on Apocalypse in various ways, and it's available in print in the verbatim reports on the Bible. Suddenly, when he was speaking about Isaiah, he couldn't help constantly going to the chapter on Apocalypse, because at that time, when he was speaking about Isaiah, he began to be aware of the levels of science, where he began to teach us more and more the dimensional sense of science, Christian science, then absolute Christian science, and divine science, and finally science itself. So there are many expositions from John Dorley himself, and so all what I can do is just to recapitulate the main points, so that as much as it's necessary to see the place value within the matrix. That's all I want to do. I don't want to explain the various symbols that would have to be explained. Just the great mission or great purpose, the great aim of this chapter. What is it? It is showing the way up from Christian science to absolute Christian science to divine science, and then afterwards showing the descending way from divine science to absolute Christian science to Christian science. The upward way, the text shows as being the way of understanding, the descending way, the way of demonstration. Understanding leading to demonstration. And therefore, let's quickly see what is that ascending sense in Apocalypse. Starting out from the level of Christian science, the picture is the angel coming down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, the face like a sun, the head covered with a rainbow, the feet like pillars of fire, and the book open in the hand of that angel. And Mrs. Eddy speaks here first about the scientific thought that reaches our continent and ocean. It starts out with thought, with scientific thought. That's where we started out too today in the chapter on teaching, that we must have a scientific inward attitude. Asking that scientific thought, the thought of the reader, to read this book from beginning to end, study it, ponder it. It's like we, having seen, study the synonymous terms, that's fine, start out studying, then afterwards ponder it. Pondering and studying are two very different qualities. The studying is more the masculine quality, the pondering is the feminine quality, the quality of a woman who can take in what the masculine thought has created and established and constructed. Having seen this first step of scientific thought, acquainting oneself with the exact letter and then pondering it, the next symbolism is not an angel, but now a woman. A woman is a much higher symbol than the angel. The woman is clothed with the sun. The woman is clothed with the whole sun. And the angel only had a face like a sun. But the woman is clothed with the whole sun. The idea is clothed with all other ideas. And then it is an idea. So woman gives you a symbol of the idea. And the whole story there that runs over many pages is how that woman is giving birth to the idea. The idea that then is closed with the divine principle. It's united with that divine principle. And she shows that wonderful sense of the idea in the Christianity order, as we would expect it here, because idea, when we ask what is idea and see the bigness of idea, we always would go through the Christianity order in order to show the bigness of the idea. Here she shows that this idea is great. Great is the idea, she says there. It's secure and safe in soul. It is pure in spirit. It provided for, because the fatherhood of the idea. And it destroys error, the sonship of the idea. And is forever saved, the motherhood of the idea. Forever protected, the motherhood of the idea. So here you can see that in Christian Science that we start out from scientific thinking, and through scientific thinking, concept building, as we called it last week, through concept building, finally we come to tonality building, and finally see that an idea, when it is reflected from other idea, is actually then no more a concept, but the idea itself, an idea that reflects all other ideas, closed with the sun. Once we have seen that we have to do with idea, and nothing but idea, that the idea is great, that not thinking is great, not studying is great, but the idea is great, at that point Mrs. Eddy lifts the whole level further up to absolute Christian Science. There, she shows a new heaven and a new earth. You see, before we had the angel coming down from heaven, we had a great wonder appeared in heaven and the woman appeared, but now we have no more the old heaven, a new heaven and a new earth, and there was no more sea. At that point, we don't take any more error into account. The sea stands for error. Error is no more taken into account. All what has been taken into account is the new heaven and new earth, meaning that going out from that one principle, we begin to realize that seeing from principle, we only see ideas. So can you see what you do when you are quiet, in the quiet hours of the evening, and are pondering those synonymous terms, and look what the ideas of the synonymous terms are, and just stay there and say, there is nothing else. Remember that homework I have given you, that was at this very point of absolute Christian Science, of a new heaven and a new earth. You had a new universe. It was not a patched up universe. It's a new universe of ideas. And in this new heaven and new earth, we have really that statement that consciousness is now here and now, and there is a consciousness here and now of the cessation of death, sorrow and pain, and that this spiritual consciousness, she says, is a present possibility. She says absolute Christian Science is not something that is possible after death. It's right here and now. It's possible to have a new heaven and to have a new earth, to have a new universe. It's only a question of starting out right from the right standpoint. There in that part of the text we have that other symbol of the angel with the seven vials full of the last plagues being presented to John. A symbol of the sum total of human misery. The very counterfeit of the new heaven and the new earth. But the text reads that the angel said to John, come hither. And he's saying, instead of saying, come hither and look at these seven vials full of the last plagues, or instead of saying, come hither and drink them, he said, come hither, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. He could see that whole sum total of human misery has a full compensation in the law of love, as Mrs. Eddy calls it there. Namely, that they can be rightly seen as love wedded to its own idea. That they have no identity by itself. No identity by itself. That it only is a matter of looking at them rightly, and then you see the one heaven and the new earth as being only operative, and therefore there is no evil. But there are only false concepts, and if we take the right concept, the right attitude, come, I show you what? I show you the bride. Then you have only the activities of the divine idea. So Mrs. Eddy lifts that whole story still higher to that divine science, just where he actually at that point, this turning point, that he says, I show you what? Love wedded to its own idea, divine science. Where love only knows its own loveliness, nothing else. And so showed the holy city. Oh, good. In that ascending way, you can see how Mrs. Eddy treats the same subject in a different way, each time from another, when she touches another level. For instance, the concept of matter. As long as she is speaking on the level of Christian science, she gives the sense that under the supremacy of spirit, matter must disappear. See, as if there is matter, and that if we raise our thought to scientific thinking and to the point of idea, that then we get the insight, matter must disappear, which is an acknowledging that matter is there and must be made to disappear. But when she comes to the level of absolute Christian science, she shows that spirit and matter are only different states and stages of consciousness, that they are not something that have to disappear, that they are only different states of consciousness. Meaning, therefore, that spirit and matter are the same, and that we look at the same either from the point of view of divinity, then we have spirit. If we look at that very same phenomena from the point of view of the human, then we see it as matter. See, showing that they are not two, that they are one, but we realize it either as spirit from the point of view of principle, we realize it as a form of matter when we look out from a human standpoint. But when she lifts it still further up to divine science, then she says, this city is wholly spiritual. All is spirit. There she not even considers anymore that we can look at the phenomena from a mortal consciousness and see it as matter. There even that suggestion that there is another standpoint is excluded, as we know, on the level of divine science. There is only one standpoint to be taken into consideration. Can you see the stages? The question of matter here treated. Matter must disappear in Christian science. So it's a process, a time process, it must disappear. In absolute Christian science, it says, you know, matter is nothing else but spirit. When you don't see spirit from the point of view of spirit, then you have matter. But matter is spirit, and so don't be worried about it. It's not an entity by itself, it's just your false standpoint you take. Then in divine science, she says, you can't take a false standpoint because there is only one standpoint. Namely, the city, the calculus, all is spirit. There is no question of matter anymore. And in this way, you can see in various incidents how she would deal with such question like error. In Christian science, she says, You have to cast out Aaron. You have the old struggle of Michael just casting out Aaron, having a jolly good fight with that dragon, and just trying his best to cast it out. And when she comes to absolute Christian Science, then she calls that error only a latent belief. It's no more something to be cast out, then it's just again a misunderstanding, just a latent belief. And then she deals with it from the point of view of divine science, then she says, error is excluded, no night is there, finished. You feel how, when one reads the textbook structurally, how much information we get, and how we are taught to think and look at things structurally. Then you have the descending way down from divine science, from the infinite all, seeing that when we translate it to absolute Christian science, we come to the city of our God, where we begin to compute ideas, so that the infinite all now becomes a calculus of idea in absolute Christian science. And then she translates it further down to Christian science, she gives the 23rd Psalm, which then meets every human need. So you have up there the infinite all. In absolute Christian science, you have the calculus within that infinite all, a calculus of ideas, positive ideas. And when you translate it further down to the human, you see that that calculus of ideas is helping and meeting the human need as its impact on the human, like in the 23rd Psalm. So can you see what this chapter wants to show? It wants to embrace all the levels of consciousness, shows that within that one realm of being there are various altitudes of consciousness, further that there is within that an ascending way, a descending way, that it gives the high view of the infinite all, just as it gives really a view how that infinite all deals with the seven vials full of the last plague. Actually, reading that whole chapter, one gets a feeling in this chapter we find just anything. It gives the sense that she presents heaven and she presents hell. She presents heaven in all kinds of way, as the angel coming down from heaven, as the woman that is in heaven, showing that there is a new heaven, a new Jerusalem coming down from heaven. Terrific sense of heaven, terrific sense of hell. The whole text is full of hell, so to say. I just read you a few of the symbols she uses here. She speaks about the seven last plagues, the seven thunders of evil, the hemlock cup, eating the bitter herbs, the great red dragon, the old serpent, the devil, Satan, malicious animal instinct, criminal instinct, cruelty, the highest degree of human depravity, hidden mental ways of error. Do you get the creep by now? Or sin, sickness and death. She speaks about envy, hate, revenge, war, enmity, chaos, lust, witchcraft, tears, pain, light, tribulation. Can you hear? And what she wants to say is, actually, both are the same. There is not the heaven and somewhere else an entity called hell. They are both the same. It's only a matter of consciousness. It's a matter of consciousness, namely, that nothing finished. Nothing goes on, really, but one thing, namely the operation of divine principle, and that's always good, that's always heaven, no matter what happened. Even if from the human standpoint we misinterpret it as hell, it's still actually, in reality, the idea that is operating. Okay.